Welcome back to Legally Uncensored. I'm your host, Demetria Graves, a licensed family law attorney based in California. On this show, we aim to provide you with valuable tools and knowledge to navigate the often treacherous waters of family law through discussions and uncensored insights. As we tackle the complex topics that lie at the heart of love, relationships, and oftentimes war, it's always clear that we have much more to discuss. This season, we are diving into the unspoken shadows of traumas within a divorce from narcissism, untold stories, and beyond. Today, we want to talk about DWI, divorcing under the influence. While we know there are many external and internal factors that lead to differences, failed relationships, and divorce, we want to get deeper into your first influences. Yes, your parental figures and your upbringing. Families can often play a role in meddling in relationships, but today we want to discuss how your biological parents or family relationships play a role in how you show up in relationships. On the show today, we have a very special guest, Jamila Barnes, producer, entrepreneur, speaker, and author, and overall inventor. Jamila is often requested to speak on numerous panels, seminars, and schools across the country regarding entrepreneurship, business management, book publishing, and relationship topics. She is the author is Raised by the Mistress and is also launching the podcast Raised by ... this year. The book Raised by the Mistress by Jamila Barnes is a riveting, unflinching look at marriage, infidelity, and substance abuse. The book provides a rare 360-degree view of these issues by the people directly involved. The mistress, who stayed for 20 years, the husband, who carries on the affair, and the daughter, who was hurt and confused by her mother's choice to be the other woman. Raised by the Mistress is a straightforward and unapologetic story of overcoming, redemption, and ultimately love. Wow. Please welcome Jamila Barnes to Legally Uncensored.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you so much. You already have such an interesting and inspiring background. But before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit about yourself and what made you write this book that I'm going to go get today and sure. Read.
The book for me was therapy. It was a part of my healing process. And what I found was I was journaling to kind of get those feelings out. And as I'm journaling, I look down and I have like 75 pages in. So after that, I was like, you know what? I'm actually, not only am I releasing it, but I'm actually in my release, I'm telling an incredible story. And that ultimately became the outline and the footprint and the blueprint of what ultimately became my book, Raised by the Mistress.
Before we get into everything, how did your parents feel about you writing this book?
So they were really supportive. You know, what's interesting is I found myself calling my mother to help me remember certain moments because in my therapy process, I learned that I have these blackout moments of certain traumatic incidences in my life where I can remember all the details up to a certain point. And that point is where it was incredibly emotional for me. And I don't have memories after that emotional moment. So it literally, like, the memory blacks out. But I know that the moment continued because there's pictures to document it. Everyone else remembers how the day ended. And I literally just can't see it. So I found myself calling my mother to help me to complete some of these like storylines. And she was giving such incredible information and contributions to, you know, the book. And I was like, you know what, Mom, how about you help me write this? Like, do you want to be my co-writer? And maybe we can share, you know, like our shared experience in it. And her part of it, of course, was incredibly dynamic. And then we together, we were like, you know what, let's talk to him about his voice and him participating. So now the three of us began to collaborate on something that ultimately was one of the biggest tools in our healing process as a family. So that's kind of, you know, how they got involved, and they were very supportive every step of the way.
That's awesome and probably quite healing for everybody involved. Absolutely. But so everyone knows what we're talking about. Let's get into it. So how was, before you got to this amazing healing journey, how was your relationship with your mom and your dad? So can you kind of explain your family dynamic?
So for clarification, so Wayne, the man in the story, he's not my biological father. He's my bonus dad. But my biological parents, my mother and my father, they divorced when I was very young, 4 or 5 years old. And after they divorced, my dad moved on. He got remarried, and I have a beautiful, incredible bonus mom, my stepmom, Jackie. But my mother, she moved on to become involved with this gentleman who was married. And that's the dynamic as far as the three of us. But, you know, my mother and my biological father, they literally did the right thing as it relates to a divorced, you know, household and co-parenting. And when I say they did the right thing, meaning they never shared with my brother and I why they got divorced. They never talked about each other negatively. Whatever their issue was, they kept that away from my brother and I. And that was probably one of the best things that they could have done for us, because it allowed my brother and I to have our own unique relationship with each parent without being mad at daddy for doing this or mad at mom for doing this. We just didn't know. And not only did they keep it from us, but they were peaceful in their co-parenting relationship. The families continue to support each other. So, you know, they really have an incredible blueprint as far as the dynamic, the family dynamic. And that led to a lot of, you know, great family experiences. But then in those separate worlds, like my mother, as she's now falling in love with this married man, once I learned of him being married, oh my God, it shifted so many things and became, I wouldn't say unhealthy, but it just became emotionally one of the biggest, you know, hurdles that I've been through in my life. So yeah, it was very difficult after learning of the dynamic. It was very, very difficult emotionally.
That is so interesting to hear, because, you know, I'm in the divorce world where everything is so crazy and sometimes mm-hmm. so toxic. So to hear that that was the positive mm-hmm. experience for you, and then this is a great insight for a lot of people. Sometimes that can be positive, but then what happens? The aftermath mm-hmm. of divorce can Absolutely. Get toxic. So when did you learn that your mom was a quote-unquote mistress? Right. At your age, you might not have known the term, but when did you know that things were right. a little different?
So yeah, girl, I will take the quotes off. It was not quote-unquote. She was a mistress. No, it's, I learned, oh my gosh, I was about 7 years old, and it was Christmas Day, which is also my mother's birthday. So every year for Christmas, there is this incredible dynamic of, like, you know, happy birthday, and then where are my gifts? You know, so we've always had a hyper sensitivity around my mother celebrating her birthday on Christmas Day. So now as she's gotten older, she separates. So the 25th of December is her birthday. Don't talk about Christmas. It is her birthday on that day. And the family, we all get together at her house on the 26th, and we open Christmas gifts. We do Christmas on the 26th with my mother. It was this one Christmas, I was 7 years old, and my brother and I were opening. We had a very difficult Christmas. My mother financially was just not in the best place at that time. And we had just a few gifts, and my brother and I were like opening our gifts, and my mother was on the floor, on the couch somewhere. She was crying. And we were like, why are you crying? And she's like, because he's at home with his wife and kids. Yes.
She told you both this?
I believe she was a little intoxicated at that time, but she was flat out, like, she was honest about why she was crying on her birthday and on Christmas. And as a 7-year-old and as a 9-year-old, all we knew was that that was mommy's boyfriend. We knew what a husband and a wife were as 7 and 9 year olds understand it. But when she made the distinction that he's not here because he's with his family, it kind of hit me as a 7 year old, like, so who are we? Who are you to him? And it stuck with me in that moment. I didn't understand the dynamic at that age, but I understood that whatever it meant, it was hurtful to my mother. So I'm just trying to process, well, why is he crying? Why is she crying? Because he's not here. And as, you know, month after month, year after year, it became more evident as to what this dynamic actually meant.
This is very fascinating to me because the divorce wasn't the problem, but now we're getting into all of these layers of the impact of divorce on families, right? So you and your brother didn't have an issue with the divorce, but now your mom is going through, you know, her emotional needs during this post-divorce time and trying to figure out who she is, trying to be a parent to you all. And now you all are trying to put together the pieces of what this all means for you and your brother. So now you're 7. You're witnessing all of this. You might not have all the words to put it in perspective for yourself, but watching your mother from the 7-year-old period on, how to be being raised by your mom post-divorce and as a mistress, how did that impact your self-esteem and your sense of identity?
Sure. You know, it actually helped to shape my standard and my expectation in my own relationships from the standpoint that I always felt like I would never be somebody's mistress. I would never be the other woman. But the beautiful story about the beautiful, I guess, dynamic in this story is that what I witnessed between them absolutely became my aspiration. So while I despised the dynamic of my mother as a mistress, I loved how this man loved on my mother when I would see them. So as I'm now, you know, in my teens and a young adult, I always held my paternal grandparents, Roy and Grace Barnes, rest in peace, love my grandparents. They were always the epitome of how I wanted to be loved. And witnessing my mother in this dynamic, this complicated dynamic as this man's mistress, I wanted to be loved like how he loved her, but never under those circumstances. So I kind of like, you know, my self-esteem was actually high. It was very strong because I'm like, I know how to be loved. And I also know how you're not going to love on me. So it gave me like tools as far as, you know, as a young lady, it definitely gave me the direction and some, you know, some guidance as far as what I was willing to accept and what I was absolutely willing to never accept.
So because from the outside looking in, some people might say that that was very toxic love, though, because he wasn't there on a consistent basis. There was limited time for him to love on your mother. So how did you learn how to shape? There's so many going on for you. So how are you able to shape your understanding of love, loyalty, and commitment? You kind of answered
I can,
quite beautifully, but how did you?
So I can always kind of like dig deeper. I'm just, you know, trying to answer, you know, in the spirit of like the general questions, but this has really truly been my upbringing. Like I'm 46, you know what I mean? And I learned at 7 years old. It's almost 40 years now that I've kind of been, you know, navigating this dynamic. So I like to call myself an expert in this space, girl, because it's not research based. It is.
You
not
are.
Yes,
40
ma'am.
Years.
Yes, ma'am.
40
yes,
years
ma'am.
Of experience.
Yes,
you are an expert.
And it's, you know, I think I learned Yes, let me answer your question about a lot of people defining it as toxic. Absolutely, undoubtedly, yes. Yes, it's toxic. It was toxic. And toxic across the board, from the, you know, from the wife being betrayed, from, you know, my mom as the mistress playing a role kind of in the betrayal, as the husband, you know, kind of creating this duality and this double life almost, and the children kind of witnessing it. Then there was also an undercurrent of alcoholism that was heavily, you know, a part of the storyline. But what I learned is that we can all go through things, and we all have toxic experiences in our lives. But the takeaway is like, okay, are you going to be a victim to what you've experienced, or are you going to be a survivor? Are you going to take the bad and say, okay, because my mother was alcoholic, I'm going to abuse alcohol? No, I monitor my relationship with alcohol to this day. You know, because I witnessed this, you know, incredible toxic dynamic growing up, am I going to allow myself to kind of like repeat that or have those experiences for myself? So being clear that it was a lot of toxicity, I chose as best I could to pull the good. I refused to get stuck in the negativity of it all. I refused to look at that dynamic and say, this is gonna, what's gonna become of my life. No, I'm like, this is my life, and I can choose a different path for myself. I can pull the good that I saw from that toxic relationship, and I can emulate all the good that I want for my life and for myself and for my love. And, you know, I never, especially now that we're in a healed space as a family amongst the three of us, the four of us, really, when you include my brother. But, you know, even though their relationship was toxic on the outside, on the inside, me and my brother really truly got to witness unconditional love. And I don't celebrate it. I don't celebrate the fact that my mother was a mistress, but I celebrate the fact that I've been privileged enough to see what unconditional love looks like.
Mm-hmm. Right. What are some of the challenges? I know you can't really speak for your brother, sure, but I'm including him because he's part of this dynamic. What are some of the challenges you both face while navigating this relationship and ultimately both of your relationship with your mother?
I would say our biggest challenge, Demetria, was my mother's battle with alcoholism. That was a bigger challenge as children and teens and young adults than us dealing with my mother being a mistress. And I'll tell you why. When you're a mistress, nobody knows. When you're walking down the street, you're out at a restaurant, you're at a family function, you're just a mistress. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you are under the influence of alcohol or drugs, it is evident. People can see it. People can hear it. They can smell it. You are, you know, not coherent. So there was a level of shame that my brother and I had in dealing with my mother's alcoholism, that we didn't want our friends to see our mother when she was intoxicated. We didn't want to have friends over. It didn't take away from our love for her, but we certainly, that was one of our biggest challenges, to be honest with you. And then there was like this deep-rooted anger around the fact that mom was a mistress. We pointed that at Wayne. We were like, you know, why are you doing this to our mother? But truthfully, homegirl was not going nowhere. She wasn't going nowhere.
How did you know your mom was battling alcoholism?
Yes. We would see the bottles. She would leave out the house to go to the liquor store on the corner in West Baltimore. She would come back with her bottle. She would make her cocktail. You could, you know, she would come home at nights and was intoxicated and, you know, just in a drunken state. She still, no matter how intoxicated and fun of a night my mother had, she was still very much come home and be in her black mama element and, like, you know, clean up your room and get these dishes done. You know, she was still all of those wonderful, glorious things that she is and was as a mother.
Was it post-divorce that this became more evident to you? Or was this?
It was post-divorce. And for a very long time, my brother and I, like I said, we blamed Wayne. We blamed the married man for my mother's drinking, only to learn that he actually had his drinking under control. My mother, her drinking, you know, she definitely enjoyed drinking with him, but she also drank a lot without him. And it was definitely post-divorce. So my mother doesn't, she's never shared with us that her alcoholism was around when she was married to our dad. But I think I think she would enjoy drinks from a few drinks from time to time, but it wasn't until she really got into the space of this relationship as a mistress that we really noticed her drinking, and it was post divorce. And I'm sure the divorce played into it. Her upbringing played into it. The fact that this man she loves who can't be with her, that played into it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, her coping mechanism. Exactly. We always talk about divorce and what happens during divorce, but we rarely shed light on what people have to do to cope with the divorce and then moving on with the divorce and then raising kids post-divorce. And then now this whole other dynamic, which is very challenging for a lot of people. I do want to kind of transition for you into now you're older. Right? You're getting into your own relationships. Did you find it challenging to establish trust and maintain healthy relationships once you got into the dating space?
Yes, I was hoping you didn't ask this question. Yes. So one of the traumas of my upbringing is that it definitely caused me to have trust issues. And even to this day, I will say that I do still find myself having moments of questioning trust. But the healing and the work that I'm doing on myself is to not allow myself to succumb to the negative thoughts that can kind of keep me hostage around the trauma that I've worked so hard to kind of like push through. So yes, trust showed up in a lot of ways for me, and the lack of trust showed up in a lot of ways for me. And I just refused to ever give up on love. I just refused. I was like, all right, I know my trust keeps getting betrayed, but I believe that, you know, that it's going to work out for me. I believe that I'm going to find a relationship and be in a healthy relationship where I feel reassured. I'm going to find a man who is trustworthy and will earn my trust and keep my trust and who will trust me and, you know, allow the relationship to fully, you know, reach its potential. And after, you know, I went through my divorce, I prayed a prayer to God. I was like, listen, you know, like I pray that, you know, you prepare me for my husband and prepare him for me and allow him to be looking for me and to find me. And when he finds me, I pray that I will know that he's the one. And like, I prayed that for so many years, and I still pray that prayer to this day. And I'll pray it until I'm remarried. I will continue to pray that prayer. But yeah, I've had issues with trust for sure over the years, but I refuse to give up on it.
So you said you did get married. So your partner that you married, did you see any of the dynamics with either your biological father or with Wayne in that relationship before you got married?
Oh, that's a whole new podcast. Look. Okay, honey. So listen. So, you know what's interesting? My ex-husband, my dad is an incredible, incredible, amazing, wonderful, strong, dynamic black man. I love my dad to my core. My father is flawed. He's very flawed, as we all are, right? But the type of man that he is at his core is really beautiful and much to be celebrated about him and Wayne, who is my bonus dad. But my father in particular, I used to always pray that the guy that I would eventually marry would be a combination of my father and my brother, because how they are to their women, it's beautiful. My ex-husband has the exact same birthday as my father. So when he showed up in my life, and he and I met in college, and then we didn't start seriously dating until, you know, after college. But, you know, as I started developing these feelings for him, and I was like, oh my God, okay, so he has the same birthday as my dad. And, you know, he's like my dad, but he's not like my dad in a lot of ways. But I noticed, I can't say things that I saw in my father or in my bonus dad, but the things that showed up for me, made it clear to me that he, meaning my ex-husband, was and is a great father to our daughter, but he was not the husband for me. He wasn't the husband for me. So
was he in any way like your mother?
No, he really was very much not like my family at all. I'll just say that. And that's not good or bad. It's very indifferent. He's just, you know, he is very unique in his own way. And the things that I valued about him as a husband, you know, early on in my marriage to him, I learned that my needs as a wife were growing and evolving and shifting and reshaping. And the things that I needed from him as his wife, it wasn't that he didn't want to give me those things or do those things. He just was unable. He just was unable. And I don't hold him to fault for that. I just said, okay, the things that I need, because, you know, we did marriage counseling and we were clear on our needs versus our wants. And the wants are optional. Okay, I want this, I want that, but the needs are non-negotiable and on both sides. So the things that he identified as his needs, I was willing and able to provide as his wife. The things that I needed, he wasn't willing and wasn't able. And that was my confirmation that I had to let that go.
Yeah, some people I had to learn the hard way myself. Some people just aren't capable, although they might want to at their core and say, yes, I can do this. But when it comes down to it, they just don't have the capacity to show up for you the way that you need. So how long were you married? 7 years. So during that
time, we were together for 13, but seven in the marriage.
Mm-hmm. Seven married. So during this 13-year relationship, can you share any influences or factors that showed up for you mentally that you might be able to attribute to like your upbringing?
Sure. Yes. There were moments where the reassurance that I needed around my issues with trust, he was unwilling to pour into. And his position was, you just need to trust me. And that doesn't always work when you're in a space of healing. And if you've been betrayed by your significant other, if they have violated your trust, if they've betrayed your trust, if they haven't been loyal, if they've consistently lied, if they were not transparent, if all those things show up, the work isn't in just trust me, because that's not enough. You have to pour into it. You have to reassure your significant other. You have to, you know, move different. Okay, this is what I'm doing. This is where I'm at. This is who I'm with. And not that everything has to be accounted for, but there has to be a certain level of transparency to rebuild the trust or the violation or the betrayal that experience that showed up and, you know, that you may have experienced. So for me, those things definitely showed up. And when I needed the reassurance and I needed the rebuilding of the trust, it just wasn't there. It wasn't provided for me. And I felt like I was kind of like, you know, left on an island almost by myself trying to repackage hurt and pain that I experienced that wasn't from my past or my upbringing, but that was from my present relationship. So I could look at, okay, this feels like, you know, that time when I was hurt in my past, or this feels like what I went through in my past and how I pushed through that. It was a lot of work, a lot of rebuilding, a lot of internal, you know, healing and closure. And being in my marriage with my ex-husband, I just, when I needed that from him, I wasn't provided that. And, you know, you look at your husband as a provider. I need you to reaffirm my heart, reaffirm your love for me. And I'm not asking for much. I don't ask for much.
So do you think, because of your upbringing, because of what you witnessed your mom do you think you stayed longer than you may have stayed?
Yes, Demetria. I did not know that this was going to be a therapy session. I thought this was a podcast.
I'm into it. I'm like, you have such a beautiful story.
Okay, I got my tissues here, but I didn't know. So I had to, you know, be tapping into it. Oh my gosh.
Don't cry, because if you cry, I'ma cry.
it's a lot. I mean, I want you to restate your question so I answer it correctly.
No worries, and take your time. Do you feel you stayed longer in your marriage because of what you witnessed with your mom and your family?
So yes, and I'm not going to cry, but yes.
Sure, we can cry together. If you need to cry, just let it out.
I did. And he and I were great friends in college. We were great friends in college. We both were involved with other people in college. So we were not each other's love interest at that time. But when I realized that my marriage was failing, it forced me to address my issues with abandonment that I had never addressed. Because what we didn't get into, which goes back to when my mother and my father divorced when I was like 4 or 5, my very first memory is of my mother walking out the door and leaving. And my dad said, "Jamila, don't let mommy go." So at 4 or 5, I felt responsible for letting mommy walk out the door. I didn't know what it meant, obviously. But all I know is my dad said, "Don't let mommy go." And mommy walked out the door. And then it goes dark. The memory goes dark. So throughout my life, I kind of had a fear of people that I love leaving. Even though my mother didn't abandon us, my mother was not absent from our lives at any point in time. There was something about that moment that I carried for my whole life. Fast forward to now looking at my marriage that was failing. And I was like, oh my God, I can't leave. I can't leave. Why can't I leave? What is this? Like, I'm not happy anymore. He's not happy. We were great friends, but we're not great as significant others. Why is this feeling heavy for me to like leave? And that's when I realized that I was having a difficult time with abandonment. And in my instance with filing for divorce, I wasn't the one leaving. I wasn't the one being left. I would be the one causing the separation. I would be the one causing the divorce by me filing for divorce. So it took me about years to get the courage and the strength to actually file the paperwork. Because I knew early on, I knew in like year three or four, I knew that my marriage was failing and I just didn't have the courage. So it took me that amount of time. And I did find myself staying longer than I should have stayed, for sure, to answer your question. And I can look at my mother. I can look at, you know, how long she stayed and accepted a situation that she felt loved, but the circumstances didn't, the circumstances were not love. But she stayed and she stayed committed. And I definitely could feel that showing up in my marriage.
That's so interesting. I hear therapists talk a lot about toxic hope, right? We hope that things are going to change. We hope that people are going to show up for us the way that we deserve. Do you think that played any influence or had any influence with your mom and her relationship and you and your relationship?
Absolutely. There is no way that any person would stay in a long-term relationship under the circumstances and dynamics that my mother did for 20, more than 20 years, 20 plus years, without there being a level of hope attached to it, even though the dynamic was toxic. So her desire for this relationship, her hope for the relationship was greater than the pain and the toxicity that she was experiencing. Her hope was a lot stronger. And I could see that playing out for myself as well. I in those 3 years that it took me to kind of get the courage, I was hoping for sure that things shifted and changed for the better. So I stayed in a situation that that didn't feel good. And the great thing I'll say before we wrap up about my marriage is that it wasn't toxic. It was definitely hurtful, but it wasn't toxic. We didn't have no crazy drama. We didn't have like it didn't take, you know, it to be overly, you know, like toxic and abusive before we were like, this just isn't working. So that's the one thing I am grateful for, even though we had some incredible challenges that can be on the next podcast, for sure. In my divorce, okay. But yeah.
Okay. I do want to share though, that now you are in a healthy relationship. You have such a beautiful, complicated story like most of us do. What is some advice you can give to someone that may not be as strong as you are, that cannot see the positive, you know, factors or lessons that come from situations such as yours? What is some advice you would give that person?
I would say no matter what you've been through or what you've witnessed in your life regarding love and relationships, always know that you have an opportunity to create, live, and tell your own story. No matter what we've been through, we all have opportunities to make decisions for our lives that affect us. You can be in the most toxic and the most hostile and the most abusive relationship, and you can say, I've been through that, I survived that, and this is the life I'm going to choose for myself. This is the path I'm going to choose for myself. This is the journey I'm going to choose for myself. And you have to fight the good fight, like never be willing to stop fighting the good fight and always believing that you deserve and that the love that you deserve, the peace that you deserve, that it will find you. You just have to claim it and manifest it and never stop believing.
That is beautiful. And before we go, I do want to state that your mom did end up marrying Wayne.
Yeah,
is that correct?
She did, girl. That whole story, that whole dynamic was amazing and beautiful. It was an incredible moment of healing and closure and completeness with how that you know, moment happened. I had the closure that I needed around their relationship, my you know, accepting of their relationship. And it all happened on the very same day that he was about to propose to my mother. And she accepted his proposal after 20 something years. And when you see them now, today, you would think that they are newlyweds. It is still as dynamic. It is still as beautiful. It is still as unconditional as it was when I was a 7-year-old watching this complicated relationship. So, yes, but she is happily married to her man. And, you know, she's been my man for so many years. And I celebrate them and I honor them. And I love that I've got to witness the type of love that they have, you know, for sure.
Which shows us that life can be very beautifully
complicated. Beautifully complicated. So, and, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, but, you know, we all have an opportunity to, you know, decide the circumstances and dynamics that work for us. But ultimately, you know, love will prevail. And I do believe that.
And that is a beautiful note to end. I want to thank you so much for sharing your powerful story. It was very encouraging to me, and it was beautifully complicated. Your journey of resilience and growth is truly inspiring, and I'm sure our listeners will gain valuable insights from your experiences. So please be sure to check out the book, because I'm going to get it today, Raised by the Mistress, and stay tuned for Jamila's upcoming podcast, Raised by ... Thank you again for joining us on Legally Uncensored. Remember, life may throw unexpected challenges our way, but with courage and determination, we can overcome and bloom into our own true selves. Until next time, take care and keep seeking the path to a brighter and empowered future. And follow us on all social media platforms at Legally Uncensored.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Be sure to check out Jamila's book, Raised by the Mistress, coming out soon. And please be sure to follow her at Jamila Barnes.